We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now, New Galaxy Enterprises proudly presents Inalienable and Free, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. This is Johnny Bluestar. My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. Projects could be nonfiction books or novels, screenplays, commercials, audio or video products, musical scores for ads, TV or film, etc. If you need help to accomplish your goals, visit NewGalaxyEnterprises.com or contact me at JohnnyBluestar@gmail.com. Turn your vision into a dazzling media reality. Manifest your media dream today. This is Johnny Bluestar back again with Inalienable and Free, our second program dedicated to explore the fruits of liberty and the policies and attitudes which can make our planet great. I am joined by Dr. Hugo Rodier, an integrative medical practitioner who, like many of us, love what they do, but feel the need to step outside of the complexities of their professions to deal with the well-being of the citizens of this country and the planet. Both of us feel the need to make sense of what has happened in the United States and its impact in the world. Although we are forced to analyze the present, our goal is to help define a better future consistent with true American ideals and the American dream. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
You know, in our last program, we discussed the possibility of a sane immigration plan, balanced, fair, as possible, with the understanding that a sovereign nation has the right to set limitations on immigration and define its candidates for citizenship. One of the more controversial issues recently has been the fate of the Dreamers, children of parents of illegal immigrants who came to the United States as children. They are said to be at least 800,000 Dreamers in the United States, quite a number. Now, in our last program, you told us a bit about your experience as an immigrant coming here from Chile. Maybe you could go into more of the detail of what it took for you to become a citizen.
Well, thank you, Johnny. At the risk of dwelling on too many personal issues and facts, I came to the United States at age 16, so in many ways, I'm like a dreamer. But I came by myself. I immigrated by myself. I got a student visa. Ah. So I went to high school in Nampa, Idaho. And I was fostered by an American family who was very welcoming and very kind to me. So I stayed with them. They considered me one of their sons. And as such, it was a bit different for me because I wasn't surrounded by a whole lot of immigrants at all. In fact, the only immigrants in town were Mexican laborers, immigrant workers, if you will. And so then I went to college. Then I went on an LDS mission, all that on a student visa being postponed and all that. And in college, I was told by my church that I needed to go back to Chile to help the church grow in Chile. And I figured, okay, well, then I'll do that then. But interestingly, it was very hard for me to find Latino girls who would want to do that. They came here to immigrate and get away from their countries. So I could not date a Latina girl for nothing. It was very frustrating. I figured, well, maybe I'll just marry when I get to Chile. But you know, the hormonal imperative being what it is, I kept trying to date. I figured, well, then I'll date U.S. girls who are familiar with the culture, the Latino culture, South American culture, at least the ones who speak Spanish. And so I began to date U.S. girls who had been on missions to South American countries. One thing led to another, so I got married to one of them. And so, of course, I was a path to citizenship. But, you know, I got to say that my intention was to go back to Chile because of that church imperative. But now with the retrospect lenses, I don't know if I would have done all that. But the bottom line is I ended up a citizen of the United States when I was in medical school. And so it's been different for me, but similar enough to what dreamers are going through, to tell you that to have an opinion about their ply.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go for a second into the actual explanation of what they're facing with something called DACA. We'll explain that in a second. Let's listen to this for a while.
I remember the day that I found out I was undocumented. I got a call from an admissions office from a university that I had applied to. They wanted to see a green card. I was extremely embarrassed. My mother just started crying. In between her tears, she just started apologizing and told me that it was her fault and that she wanted a better future for us and look at what happened.
That's Juan Escalante. When he was 11 years old, Juan and his family came to the United States from Venezuela, where life had become dangerous.
We were driving, and we stopped at a red light, and a man approaches the car, and he tells my mother, if she doesn't surrender the car to him, he is going to pull out a gun and kill one of her kids in the car, right there. We picked up everything, we sold all our toys, and, you know, just embarked on this journey.
Juan made it to college and graduated. But because he was undocumented, he couldn't work, and he worried about being deported.
Even like a trip to the grocery store, and you get pulled over, and that's it, it's game over.
But that changed in June of 2012.
Effective immediately, the Department of Homeland Security is taking steps to lift the shadow of deportation from these young people.
If you come to the U.S., when you were under 16. If you were either in high school or had a high school diploma, and if you had either no criminal record or like a teeny tiny misdemeanor,
then you could apply for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program. Basically, a permit that protects you from getting deported and allows you to work legally in the U.S. Juan got this protection, and so did nearly 800,000 others who applied. But now, that protection is gone.
I'm here today to announce that the program known as DACA, that was effectuated under the Obama administration, is being rescinded.
DACA was designed to protect a generation of young undocumented immigrants known as Dreamers, named after a bill called the DREAM Act, which had been floating around Congress for more than a decade, and with bipartisan support. The bill would have given unauthorized immigrants who grew up in the U.S. a way to gain legal status and eventually apply for citizenship. And even though it fell short of 60 Senate votes in 2010, the idea was still popular with the American public.
When President Obama announced DACA, it was in the middle of the 2012 presidential campaign, but it didn't turn into a huge campaign issue because Republicans were really ambivalent about turning immigration into a wedge issue.
We need to help accommodate these kids who, through no fault of their own, find themselves in this legal limbo.
We cannot forever have children who were brought here by their parents when they were small children to live in the shadows.
But in 2014, Obama proposed making older immigrants eligible for DACA and creating similar protections against deportation for undocumented parents with children who were U.S. citizens.
And a lot of Republicans said, whoa, that's too far.
These new actions would have protected about 4.5 million people, nearly half the estimated undocumented population. A group of 26 states sued the Obama administration over the expansion, and they won. A federal judge stopped the DACA expansions from going into effect, hinting that they were probably unconstitutional.
People had started thinking back to, well, if those bigger programs were unconstitutional, what does that say about this DACA program that's already in place?
Then came Donald Trump.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists.
Once Donald Trump became the leading Republican presidential candidate running on an immigration hardline platform, Republicans started to look at things in a new light.
If it weren't for me, you wouldn't even be talking about illegal immigration.
When Trump won, DACA's fate seemed sealed. But even though he revoked lots of Obama's other executive orders on immigration, nearly 8 months into his term, he still hadn't ended DACA.
A lot of the immigration hawks began to go, wait, we were promised that you were going to get rid of this amnesty that exists right now. What the heck happened?
So a bunch of states threatened to sue the government over DACA again if Trump didn't get rid of it, which brings us to early September 2017.
It is my duty to ensure that the laws of the United States are enforced and that the constitutional order is upheld.
It's a very stark message that leaves a whole lot of people who only consider themselves to be Americans in limbo for the next several months.
In the 5 years it's been around, DACA has had a big impact on young undocumented immigrants. A survey of DACA recipients found nearly 70% got a job with better pay. More than 60% opened their first bank account. Nearly 65% bought their first car, and a similar share say that they've pursued educational opportunities they previously couldn't. But when these protections expire over the coming weeks, months, or years, they'll be back where they started before 2012, unable to work legally and constantly at risk for deportation.
Well, you know, seems to me that's an awfully stressful situation for these young people, don't you think, Doctor?
I sure do, and I remember those days when I was in high school and college, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Every year I had to renew my visa, so I had some security as compared to these kids who came illegally. So I came legally, but I think I share a lot of the feelings. I did share a lot of the feelings that they have, that is, you know, such insecurity, not knowing what your future held, not knowing another country, because a whole lot of them just don't recall their country of origin. So it'd be like uprooting you, if you will. And so, yes, those are rough times, and I feel bad for these kids.
Well, you know, it seems to me that what they're going through is like an electrical light switch going on and off and on and off and on and off and never knowing what's going to happen to them for months and months and months. Is it really right to do this to people? I mean, it seems to me a kind of punishment for being victims of your parents' decisions, however right or wrongly based. What do you think of the underlying motivations for treating them this way?
Well, you know, as we've talked before, when we like to get into what the ancients created for us, what they discovered, there's really nothing new under the sun. So, Johnny, we've talked about strength and wisdom, the pillars of the Kabbalah. And so I think the Trump administration is coming from, and the people who follow him and support him, are coming from strength. It's hard to not see their point of view. I totally understand it. But it's coming from strength. You know, this is the law. We have a right to close our borders. All those things make sense. How can you argue with them? But strength is good, but it's unbalanced. We need to balance it with wisdom. So I believe the position of those who want to get rid of DACA, at best, makes sense legally, but I think it's grounded on prejudice. You know, to not see the wisdom of admitting letting kids stay here, kids that are highly motivated to become Americans, kids that have a chip on their shoulder and want to prove themselves, that want to make a better life for them and those around them, that are motivated to work hard and study hard, when the rest of American natives, you're hard put to find that in Americans who have been here for generations, sorry to say. And so let me tell you one more thing. When I was in that position as a student, I had a chip on my shoulder and I told myself, they think I'm a dirty immigrant. They're going to see I'm the best dirty immigrant they ever saw. And I wanted to become an American in the worst way, and so I studied the slang of the culture, the movies, everything. I just wanted to pass for an American as much as I could. And, you know, it bore fruit, you know, that my attitude. Of course, it had some downsides, but We might get into those later. But the point is that there's wisdom in letting these kids stay. I think it'd be good for the whole country.
Well, we're going to pursue this a little bit more, and maybe after the break discuss a little bit of a solution or an approach that each of us might have. And let me go to our break now, and here we go. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. If you need an audio ad for your website, AM, FM, or satellite radio, please contact us. I personally created simple voice spots, elaborately produced ads with original voices and music, and longer infomercial ads for various clients, radio stations, and my own talk shows and dramatic radio series. We stress a combination of creativity and powerful marketing ads, often involving the rotation of various ads during a campaign period. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. In Killer.com, Brent Marks, an attorney and protagonist of Ken Ead's Brent Marks legal thriller series, is attacked by defamatory posts on the internet. Attempting to sue them, Marks becomes a victim of further plot against him when they hire a paid-for assassin to initiate a murder which they ultimately pin on Brent Marks. The following excerpt describes the killer's first steps to carry out his assignment.
It was like the beginning of the end of the world. Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. That's what the survival hawks had said, but everyone had always thought they were crazy. Now, she realized they were right, as she watched the mobs of people looting the streets of Chicago, smashing windows and breaking down doors, as the police stood by in their riot gear, doing nothing about it. The sky was already a hazy brown, probably from all the fires. She could hear the fire engine sirens, and had seen plumes of smoke from all over the city on her taxi ride from the University of Chicago.
Keep enough cash in case of emergency.
Even her economics professor, Harry Mason, who was a relatively conservative buy-and-hold investor, had advised her to keep cash just in case, and to also have some hard assets in a portfolio. Shirley Baxter, called Snooky by most of the people who knew her, looked out the window of the cab at the chaos outside that used to be the streets of Chicago. Some people were carrying huge bottles of water, and some were rolling shopping carts filled with food. Others were stealing the spoils from each other. A rock suddenly hit the side of the cab with a loud clank, just missing the window, and Snooky ducked down.
"You don't want to go out there," said the cab driver, a rough and tough type with a pack of cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve of his t-shirt.
"Will we make it?"
"Oh, you'll make it to the airport, all right. I don't know about your plane. Where are you headed?"
"Washington. I'm supposed to be in a group who's testifying before the Senate Finance Committee."
"Well, you tell them for me that they've screwed everything up. Excuse my French, but there's no other way to say it."
I wrote this song with composer Edgar Arendts, and it's sung beautifully by Patricia Welch. "Love Never the Withers."
I remember that day when the wind
to me, it would seem like the Trump administration is making some kind of magical anointing for being born in a certain place. In this case, dreamers weren't born here, but they were allowed to live here for a long period of time. I think instead of amnesty, with the exception of criminal wrongdoing and serious misdemeanors, people who have been here a long time without persecution should be able to claim something automatically akin to squatter's rights. Squatter's rights are when you occupy a place that's not yours for a long enough time because the government thinks that land should be used, you get to own it. And if they're here for a long time and their employers seem to want them, which is usually the reason they're allowed to stay because no one really reports them, I think they should be allowed to stay and granted a path to citizenship. What do you think of that idea, Doctor?
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. So if a child, a DACA kid, gets a path to citizenship, what about the parents?
I definitely think that the parent, well, in my scenario, the parents have been here a long time, say, and they should be automatically given a path to citizenship. Maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 5 years. And if not, if they're not here, we can't let the parents be separated from their children. So we really should consider giving the parents citizenship too if we're going to give the children citizenship. It's ridiculous to separate families, and usually it's not just one family. I mean, one small single family, but it's a group of people or relatives.
Would they be on some kind of probation period where if they were to do anything wrong, they would be deported?
Definitely. I mean, they definitely need to be, you know, maybe they could be kind of probation period too. But obviously, we don't want people here who are criminals or are consistently doing very bad things, misdemeanors and so forth, drunken driving, whatever. But I do think that we need to have a more sensible idea because we're letting them stay here. If they're staying here for 5, 20, 30 years, nobody's enforcing and looking over what's going on, and they should be allowed to stay. That's what I think.
All right.
It's not like amnesty. It's a little bit different.
Well, I'm playing the devil's advocate because I think we need to change things to where people that have been in that position ought to be allowed to stay on a path to citizenship, but they have to keep their nose clean.
Oh, I definitely agree. Yeah.
My experience in Houston, as a medical student, I ended up doing a rotation in Houston just to deliver babies. And so I deliver like 100 babies as a medical student. In fact, one night I deliver 15 babies.
What?
As a medical student,
what? Really? Did you say?
With no supervision.
In one night?
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. But I remember being busy delivering a baby. The woman was crowning, and an orderly pushed the doors to the delivery suite open with a stretcher, a Mexican woman laboring on it, and pushed it down the hallway. And here's the stretcher rolling down the hallway, this woman screaming his head off, about to deliver. So I had to leave the impending delivery with another student, a student nurse, and rush out the hallway to stop the stretcher before it crashed and deliver the baby right on the stretcher. Well, guess what the orderly yelled when he pushed the stretcher down the hallway? Another anchor baby, another anchor baby. And so I'm afraid that we need to work on that issue too, because a lot of families, women, pregnant women, cross the border to deliver an anchor baby, meaning that baby will assure them that they'll stay in the United States because the baby will be a DACA baby.
Oh,
so,
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a kind of a little bit abusive in a way, I would say, of the United States.
Exactly. So it's a very complex issue, and I'm with you. Okay, keep that in mind. I'm just playing the devil's advocate here.
Well, that's how you shape, I mean, this is just a thought, but that's how you shape legislation, by going back and forth and trying to figure out what the best thing is, trying to take all the variables into account.
Right.
And I agree. People are coming here just for some of them. I'm not saying all of them. for the purpose of the social benefits. Let's just hear again what our friend Trump said about them originally.
All right.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
That's kind of amazing right there. Some are good people.
Some. Yeah, it's the other way around. You know, just about all of them are good people. Hard workers who want to have a better life. And I remember I became very active with the environmental movement early in my profession, and I was considered a burnt-out hippie just because I talked about clean air here in Salt Lake City 30 years ago.
Now one of the dirtiest places in the country for air.
Right, because they didn't listen to a thing I talked about 30 years ago. Anyway, I remember hanging out with the Sierra Club, and I became very disappointed with them, in them. You know, they put out an anti-immigrant policy because they felt that immigrants were trumping on our tulips. You know, they were contributing to the degrading of our environment.
Really?
I'm thinking, yeah. I said, where are you coming from? I don't get it. Have you seen me stepping on your tulips? But, you know, and so it's such a complex issue. I just think that we have to be careful with statements like Mr. Trump put out.
Well, you
and
know
I
what
think
you...
it's based on xenophobia.
Well, you know, remember you bring up the difference between the strength and wisdom. Another way that these pillars of the pillars in the Tree of Life in the Kabbalah are talked about is the pillar of the pillar of strength and the pillar of mercy. And the mercy, I'm seeing the mercy, which is also the wisdom component, disappearing completely in this administration. In every single way that you can imagine. Well, let's hear something of. Of what Trump has to say about how great things are for him with the Mexican people. Just one second. Here we go.
And I have a lot of respect for Mexico, by the way. A lot of people said, oh, he doesn't like... I love Mexico. And I love the Mexican people. I've had thousands of Mexicans working for me. I sell apartments for millions of dollars to people from Mexico. They love me. They love me.
Yep, that's pretty amazing stuff right there.
Well, Johnny, it's laughable. You know, I as an immigrant myself, you know, I'm tricultural, and I hang out with French people and Spanish Chilean people. And I tell you, my mom, rest in peace, hated this man, and so did the rest of her friends and community. What planet does he live on?
Well, I don't know. It's really hard to say. Well, I'll tell you what. Talking about more about DACA and everything. I used to live in Coachella where there was a lot of undocumented workers. I'm not saying I could identify them as undocumented, but there were a lot of Mexicans who were basically working in the fields. But that little community in Coachella Valley was relatively peaceful and normal. I worked at a classic rock and Hispanic station, a combo, and I could never get any impression of this great wrongdoing. It seems like the majority of people were economic and political refugees, and that Trump is exaggerating to say things, like you said, perhaps to cater to his base. But would you say that there are a lot of, I mean, isn't it mostly economic refugees and some political refugees that are coming over, like probably like 95% or something?
Absolutely. You know, I had to work my way through high school, and I remember in the summers I would move pipes in Nampa, Idaho, and the farmer who hired me was my bishop. So he gave me a trailer all to myself, okay, because I hang out with a American people, and I had an American foster family. I had a TV in the trailer. Right by me, there was another trailer where he had 20 Mexican immigrants piled up in one trailer, no TV. And you know what? I wasn't going to argue with the arrangement because it was all to my favor. And I translated for him. But I remember hanging out with these people. Here I was, making money, saving every penny for my selfish purposes to go to college. And you might say it was a good selfish purpose.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Guess what these people were doing, these poor Mexican workers were doing with their money? They were sending every penny to their families. Of course, they would keep a little bit for tequila and rice and beans, and I don't blame them for that. But they were sending just about 95% of their meager incomes back to Mexico to their families. Now you tell me. Oh, and they were the happiest of people. There was a grumpy teenager, a bit depressed, you know how teenagers can get, in the land of plenty, being treated like a king in my own trailer. And here next to me, there's a trailer piled up with 20 immigrants, raucous through the night, laughing, singing all night long. In that situation, these people understand life. They understand what sacrifice is, what unselfishness is, what family is. Don't we need those values here in our country?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. That shows you that money is not king when it comes to personal happiness. That there's a lot of other factors involved, and we're chasing sometimes sort of shadows. It's sort of a shame.
The pillars of justice and wisdom, justice and mercy, same thing, you know, justice and mercy, the balance of strength and wisdom.
You need to be, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. You're not supposed to love just your neighbor. You're also supposed to care for yourself. And you have to find that balance. Now, we're going to take another break for a few minutes, and then we'll be back to discuss a little bit more about the consequences and the games that are being played with these children from the DACA, from the Dreamers.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. Writing a novel can be an amazing, exhilarating adventure where you enter an inspired new world created by your own imagination. Like poetry, song, film, and playwriting, there is sometimes a strange sense that your words and ideas are coming from a new, undiscovered place in your own psyche, a presence much bigger than yourself that perhaps has guided you to this point of creativity. We would be glad to help you create a compelling story emerging so poignantly from your own imagination. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
If you're not fond of books, you may be interested in watching Dr. Rodier's slide presentation on his website, hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. It lasts 48 minutes and explains the simple roots of all diseases with pictures and graphs that are easy to understand. The presentation includes basic principles of physics, philosophy, anthropology, and history to truly integrate the most vital pillars of human health.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in his stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Well, we're back, and we're now going to examine something that's, I would say, quite fascinating and sad, which is about the possibility that DACA has become a plaything with regards to opening and closing the government altogether, what we call the government shutdown. Let's listen.
The people!
Time is running out for hundreds of thousands of dreamers.
Gutierrez, presente!
Like Maria. In the U.S. since she was 3 years old, she says she wants to serve her community if she gets a chance.
I want a Clean Dream Act. We want something that will give us citizenship, something that will allow me to go to work and go to school in peace, that won't put our communities at risk and put my families at risk for deportation.
But as Capitol Hill scrambles to keep the government open, it's looking like lawmakers' year-end funding deal will leave DACA out.
Congress has done no action in a long time, and I think there's many times where it's been put up and then it hasn't been signed or anything. For whatever reason, us not being a priority.
With a program phase-out deadline of next March, Republican lawmakers say not now.
DACA's not going to be a part of this. We made that very clear. It's not going to be a part of this. We will deal with DACA in the first part of next year. I think there'll be enough Senate Democratic votes without us dealing with DACA in this funding bill. It's a funding bill. This is not a DACA bill.
But Democrats fear a funding deadline is the only way to push for a decision.
President Trump challenged us. Do your job, Congress. Pass a law. That's what we're supposed to do. Well, here we are, 3 months later, and it hasn't been done. And what I hear from the other side of the aisle is, give us a little more time. We'll try to get to it next year.
The DACA threat is real since the funding bill needs Democratic votes to clear the Senate.
Any bill that funds the government must also include a fix for DACA,
making a government shutdown a very real possibility.
It could happen. The Democrats are really looking at something that is very dangerous for our country. They are looking at shutting down. They want to have illegal immigrants, in many cases, people that we don't want in our country. They want to have illegal immigrants pouring into our country.
A deal would likely have to include increased funding for border security and changes to the criteria for legal immigration.
We're trying to get a productive discussion going with Democrats and Republicans who will come together and recognize that a balanced bill that provides for border security, provides a sustainable solution for the DACA population, and get it done before March 5th. What worries me about a bill where you use timing, maybe a year-end budget agreement or some other device to get the bill done, that doesn't necessarily produce a bipartisan outcome.
And as the stakes only get higher,
how can you claim to care about the 800,000 undocumented immigrants that this program protects through work permits and deportation relief, but then turn your back on the 322 million people who need to know that their government is still able to function? That's holding the 322 million Americans hostage.
All eyes will be on the president's last-minute meeting with congressional Democrats. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Well, you know, Hugo, I'd just like to go over a few quick things about what happens when the government shuts down. And these are some of the consequences. Social Security checks could be delayed because of the employers who are being furloughed. Passport applications might be slowed down. Museums and parks will be shut down. Although federal taxes will go on, people will and auditing will be held back. There are many other dangers involved. Veterans getting their checks. Some workers may be let off and move very slowly. Health services could be held up. It's just a mess. Federal employees and contractors, some will be furloughed. Some will not be able to get their money back for their time off. Federal loans may be held up. defense workers may be furloughed. This is what could be happening.
Well,
so what do you think about that? Should they be a plaything of these people, of the Democrats in this case?
Well, these are signs of a dysfunctional family that cannot reconcile strength and wisdom, Democrats, Republican. And it's the vein of human nature. We have trouble finding that balance. And that's by the way, the middle pillar of the Kabbalistic tree. We just go all strength, Republicans, wisdom, Democrats, if you will, and sometimes, of course, vice versa. But totally symbols or examples of a dysfunctional, unintegrated society and government, which we see in our personal lives as well.
Was thinking, although this is kind of remote, but I was thinking about suddenly making Jerusalem the capital of Israel, and all the people that have been physically hurt, and all the protests, and one person has been killed. But this thing may ripple throughout the entire world, and we're talking about somebody who promised, peace in the Middle East. And it's just, again, it's like taking a very hard, one-sided view, which, of course, is favoring Israel and ignoring the Palestinian desire to have Jerusalem as partly their capital as well, if there's a second nation, and, the Holy Lands of theirs being there too. So it's, again, I see this replicated in almost all decisions that are being made now. Pillar of severity.
I agree. If we trace the campaign promise that Mr. Trump made, then we can see what's going on more clearly. It's so obvious that he's saying, look how good I am. I'm living up to a campaign promise. Yes, that's very good that you live to a campaign promise. But who did you promise make this promise to? The Christian coalition, people that are hell-bent on eschatology and the apocalyptic future that they envision and somewhat crave. And so these people want to have Jerusalem because that's where it's going to hit the fan and all that, and Bible prophecy and all that. That's who Mr. Trump made the promise, that Jerusalem would be the capital of Israel. And so we are having this policy driven by a very special group of people who have a right to their opinion, but they have a very specific view of the world, and it's very eschatological, meaning it's going to hit the fan, and you better be good. If you're not good, you're going to hell. That's where it's coming from, I believe.
Yeah, it's just the immensity of closing down the government. I remember the last time it was kind of partially closed, and I had a visitor here from another country, and we went to the park, and I forgot it was closed. The bathrooms were all closed. So we walked around a little bit and we left, but it was like sort of kind of surrealistic. But when people can't even get their Social Security on time or get their medical, you just can't make the dreamers responsible for that, playing a game with them. It's just not right. And so I feel kind of sorry about that.
Well, I have a question for you. When you're at the park wanting to use a bathroom, and I was speaking about it hitting the fan, where did you go? Where did you relieve yourself, in the bushes?
No, I said we left quickly.
Oh, you left quickly.
I wasn't the only person there who had that situation. So,
hey, Johnny, let me say something for a couple of minutes. Can I?
Uh huh.
This whole thing about immigration and DACA, it's working on the symptoms of the problem, and you can see how hard it is. And it's sort of a pet peeve of mine as I practice medicine. The system is so geared to working on the symptoms and not addressing the root issues. Let me tell you briefly what I think the root issue of our immigration problems are. That we live in an imperialistic society who has manipulated the rest of the world through economic, political, and even military means to control what's going on in their countries for the benefit of America. We're pillaging the resources of other nations and controlling how they run their governments and politics and markets for our benefit to maintain that spectacular rich way of life to the detriment of those societies. Guess what happens? They become poor. When they become poor, they want to leave those countries and come here. So the real answer to immigration is to stop this manipulation, economic, political, and military, of the rest of the world, so those people are able to rise up and enjoy the resources of their land, their markets, their societies. Then they wouldn't have the push to immigrate here.
Yeah, that's tremendously true.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, it's not just making them poor, it's actually blowing up their, you know, their resources, their infrastructure, their civilian population.
Right.
It's we have hundreds, I think it's, you know, I don't remember the number exactly, of different military bases throughout the world. It's like a gigantic number, hundreds. And
150. Well, we have military bases in 150 countries. We have over 200 military bases in the world.
And that dwarfs every other country completely.
Exactly.
I believe that Russia has only maybe even less than a handful.
Well, then we scream bloody murder when they try to get the Crimea back, which used to be theirs. And then when they go into Syria to support their viewpoint, that's it.
Yeah. What's happening is it's not... We really need, the people of the world really need to take back their world.
And exactly.
The actual distribution of wealth is so amazingly imbalanced that it doesn't make any sense at all. Why would people let them do it? Because these people are partially kept in ignorance and partially kept, you know, now there's actual outright persecution even of our basic rights in the United States.
Well, let me tell you about the Chilean experience, because I'm very familiar with it, though that's where I was born, okay? They were so poor because a whole lot of their resources were exploited by Kennecott, the copper mine, that has a headquarters here in Salt Lake City, by the way. And so a whole lot of the mining was exploded, and all the stuff was coming to America. Then the land belonged to only the rich people. So that socialist president Allende did two things. One, nationalize the copper. Two, allow for agrarian reform. What did he get for that? A bunch of CIA bullets in the brain. All right? But the reform was maintained by the military puppets that the CIA installed in Chile. All right? With that, not with the military economic changes, but what Allende had done, those two simple things, Chile now is the richest country in South America and on a schedule to become an industrialized nation within 5 years.
Wow.
Why? Because they were allowed to keep their resources and allow the common folk to own land. And for that, we intervene in that country and kill an elected socialist president with a, you know, alleging that he was in cahoots with Castro, which he was not.
I was going to say there's a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins.
Exactly.
Do you know that book?
I read all those books.
And oh, it's amazing, amazing, amazing writer, amazing books. And So basically, we're going into countries with so-called private individuals from corporations who work out a deal to basically get them to borrow money. Then they use that borrowing money as a way to, and then they take that money, they give it to American corporations, and then they basically, the loan is almost impossible to pay back. And then they go after getting special deals, or if they won't cooperate, maybe people get knocked off. So that's not a very nice thing either. Well, I think we're going to have to end this remarkable discussion. I think it was remarkable. It certainly I learned a lot from listening to some of your stories. But let's go out with a very famous
sort of a spiritual song in Russian, which Edgar provided to us, and we wrote lyrics for it in English, called My Heart Is Ready, sung by Patricia Welch.